Green flag in the back. Revs up. Lights out on 2019. Great start from Miller on the second row. And it's a good start from Dovizioso also. Not so much for Marc Marquez. Quartararo finally exits pit lane, but it will be the whole shot for Desmo Dobby.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 593. This is your host, Sky Vercoy, and I'm joined today to talk the MotoGP front guitar by none other than Jim. Jim, how's it going, man?
Well, that's pretty good, man. You got to deal with me, guys. Suffering the ravages of the common cold and flu, but I'm here for you because it was racing. It was good racing, so we will be on adrenaline.
Absolutely, Jim. And thanks for joining us. I know you're not feeling that great, but we'll get this knocked out. I want to thank our donors first and foremost. And remember, if you want to be a donor, go ahead and head over to motopodcast.com. You can donate button on the left-hand side there. You'll see the subscription button as well. You can pick either method. You can either donate $1 or donate $100, whichever. We're good with it. We're just appreciating the fact that you donate to the show. And we're always going to turn that money right back around and turn it into good content for you listeners. If PayPal's not really your thing, head over to patreon.com/motopod. That's just another source you can do to donate to the show. If iTunes is where you get your show, go ahead, get on there, leave us a comment. We always have to read those. We appreciate it. It also helps get the show out to more people. And of course, if you do want to send anything into us, go ahead and write us at motopodcast@motopodcast.com. All those emails will go to every host. We usually answer them quite quickly in email form. If it's good enough, we'll throw it on the show. Gary, you sent us an email. In case you're wondering, me and Derek are going to dig into that on the next World Superbike show. So stay tuned. We will get back to that on your World Supersport question. All right, now to the news. Jim, why don't you go ahead and lead us off?
So the first big news that came out of the Qatar race was that all the teams except Yamaha protested Ducati's rear wing. If you haven't seen it, there's a good picture of it on Motorsports Magazine and Moto and Matt Oxley's Motorsports MotoGP mutterings. Basically, Ducati is bolted a little scoop, if you will, to the swing arm that's in front of the rear tire. That is either there to direct air onto the rear tire to cool it, or it's there to create downforce underneath the bike for the rear tire. No one knows exactly what it's there for, although it was stated that all the teams did look at Delinea and said, hey, you race with that device. We are going to protest it. I think GG called their bluff, and sure enough, everybody walked down and threw in the money for the protest, if you will. Yamaha didn't, but that's because they have something similar that they use in the wet races to kind of move the water away from the rear tire, kind of a thing. So I think they kind of took a step back, going, we don't want to really become a part of that. Technical commission at the track dismissed the protest of the teams, stating that, hey, this doesn't contravene any rules that we have as of right now. The teams then decided they were going to counter-protest, so right now we're waiting for the MotoGP Court of Appeals to gather evidence, look into this, and hopefully they're going to have this all settled out before we reach Argentina. So as of right now, all the results in the MotoGP class are considered to be provisional. I don't want this to drag on into the courts. I don't want this to become F1. I just want somebody to say, yay or nay, it's good or bad, and let's go back to racing. That's where I am on it.
Now, the whole point of this, wasn't it something to do with, like, it's keeping the rear tire cooler or something like that?
You know, that's what they say. No one really knows for sure. It seems that it could, because you're definitely scooping air and putting it onto the center of the tire, which would be a way to control the temperature of the tire so that the tire lasts longer. You know, given the shape of it and given the, I'm not really that great of an aerodynamicist, but if you look at how it's designed, there are two planes to it. And they both appear to be curved in some nature. And if you run any kind of airflow through a narrower venturi than what's there, you speed up that airflow. If you speed up that airflow, it creates a low pressure on either side, depending on which side's going faster. So it could be aerodynamically related for downforce. We just don't know yet.
I guess time will tell, but that's the beauty of racing. Someone's got to push the limits, and Ducati's very good at that when it comes to the technical side of it.
That's Gigi's thing. He loves a tech bomb. I love a tech bomb too.
Dude, Cal Crutchlow. Now, I see this in the news here. He raced with only 70% mobility in his right ankle, which is probably more than most people thought he was going to have coming to this race. I think we got an email from Martin and Harry had mentioned, let's drop all the Motopod names in there, by the way, and most people would still be on crutches at this point with this recovery, and that the bone that he broke in his ankle was about 3 inches long and broken into 17 pieces, which is shattered. The fact that he's on a bike, and when we get to the results where he finished, was absolutely amazing. Once again, it comes back to what we keep saying about these guys. They are unreal. Their pain threshold is unreal, and what they do on a motorcycle through this pain is unreal.
Yeah, I think this would have most normal human beings would still be on crutches and limping around, and Cal's racing a 200 plus horsepower motorcycle, and he's just amazing. They're all amazing. It's kind of one of those things where you just look at it and you go, nah, he really just isn't doing that, is he? But he says that he actually tried a thumb brake, but he said that it's actually much easier for him to use his foot still because he's got enough mobility to apply the rear brake, but he has to actually pick up his whole leg and shift it backwards once he's done using the brake. So it is a little bit daunting to do, but kudos to Cal in all ways, shape, and form, because I certainly couldn't have done what that man has done.
Now, when it comes to getting things done, we thought in the off season that the Yamaha had gotten everything figured out. It looked good. Maverick kind of won testing, and even heading into qualifying, he was looking good. But some demons are starting to arise from last year, weren't they?
Yeah, it looked like, instant replay. Definitely, things are not all good at Yamaha. You know, Rossi, after the race, basically stated that they're more or less in the same place that they were last year. Hmm. Which, if Rossi says that, you know, that's not good. I don't think Yamaha is exactly, you know, flush with mega amounts of cash, but they definitely aren't struggling. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. They should be able to get on top of this situation. And you would think, you know, after the results that they had in testing, the way Vinales looked in qualifying, you kind of thought, well, okay, these guys have turned a corner. They figured it out. They've got something. And it appears that they don't, which is sad because I do not want to go through another year of talking about how bad the Yamaha is.
Let's just hope they get it figured out much sooner than by Phillip Island later this year like they did last year. All right, let's get a little bit of qualifying. Now, to be clear, myself and Jim only caught the MotoGP qualifying, but we're going to go ahead and spend a little bit of time on the Moto3 and Moto2, just to kind of interesting names. But some names that you would expect at the front of the field in Moto3, qualifying on pole was Aaron Canet, followed by Lorenzo Della Porta. But Kaito Toba, here's a guy, he, you know, qualifies third. Last year, by most people's standards, had an abysmal year coming up from the, what's the series they run there, Jim?
Oh, the Asia Cup, right?
Yeah. Came from there, you know, big hopes. But looking stronger, another year of development, another year of learning. So he was looking good in qualifying. John McPhee in fourth with the brand new team. That's good. Nicola Antonelli, kind of a return to form. He qualified fifth. Albert Reyna sixth. Tony Arbolino seventh. Celestino Viette. Now, I may not have got that right, and considering that I'm going to Italy here in a few months' time, I better get that down to not be pissing off anybody if I want to start talking motorcycle racing, Jim.
That's right. You better practice and practice good.
You know, back to Moto3, a lot of the names you would expect at the front, but the guy who came out and crushed it during all the practices and you thought was going to be a shoe-in for pole was Romano Fanati, and he finished back in 11th.
Yeah, I would have, and don't get me started on the Fanati thing, but I get everybody gets a second chance. Let's just go there. That's it, done. But of all the people, you got to look at all the experience that Fanati has, and you got to think that Fanati would have done better than 11th on the qualifying. I mean, like I said, I didn't see this qualifying, but you just got to think he would have done better. I don't know if he just couldn't get it figured out, couldn't get the timing right, whatever he was trying to do. And sometimes, you know, you get a bum tire. So any one of those things could have taken him down. But
could have been is that, you know, how important it is in Moto3. You got to get out at the right time. These guys come back in. And we saw it last year happen a couple times where they go and they all sit in the pits with their arms crossed and wait for everyone to go out. And he might have done the thing where he went out too late and missed his, you know, flying lap time. We saw that several times last year.
Mm-hmm.
Not just from Fanati, but from riders in general.
You know, the other one of interest in the qualifying that did well but didn't do as well as I thought was Anchu, the kid from Valencia, the kid that raced at Valencia at the end of the year and won. And I mean, in the series that he was racing in, that, you know, the there, that part of the Asia.
Oh, he was a Red Bull's Rookies Cup.
Okay, so that means he hadn't been to Qatar then. See, that's what I was wondering. I didn't know for sure if he was or was not in.
I don't believe so. I think you are correct. Yeah, they don't do that one. They don't start until Europe.
Yeah, so he hasn't. He's at a track he hasn't seen. So, you know, there's definitely going to be a learning curve with it all. But I still thought a top 10, top 12 would have been in the cards, but it didn't work out that way.
Nope, it did not. But we would get to the race a little bit later on, and maybe he would feature them. Like I said, there was, going into this race, there were a lot of unknowns, of course. Obviously, it's a new season. A lot of people have switched around, you know, like Marcos Ramirez is now on the Leopold team, and we know Leopard, but where was he going to finish? His qualifying wasn't that great. I think he was even further back than Ken Honcho. He was way back there, expecting a lot of Marcos Ramirez this year, because here's a guy that we've been saying, it's like, oh, if he just maybe had, was on the big teams, because him and Darren Binder were on the same team a few years back, were amazing. But we get into the race. Here's one thing I wanted to ask you about the race, because you know, obviously I never race. I've done some track days, but it's got to play havoc with these guys that they start early enough to where the sun is setting during their race.
Oh, yeah. That sucks.
I mean, because it's not only the vision, but there's got to be one part of the track is still in the sun and the other's been in the shade. That's got to screw with your traction and how the bike feels. And it's almost changing every couple of minutes on the track, right?
Yep. You know, that's where you look at guys that come from a dirt track background, Marquez's, the Stoners, the guys that have played in the dirt. They're way more better to adapt to that kind of a condition, because as that temperature changes and the groove kind of changes and how everything kind of goes along, it's a lot easier for a guy who's dirt tracked, who's always chasing a line, chasing the dirt, chasing the traction, to be able to make that adjustment. But there's really nothing that can compare you for that setting sun, especially a couple of the corners you're going into it. Mm-hmm. You basically turn blind to it, and you literally are just kind of moving by feel. You just know you should be about here, and that's where you're going, and you just kind of, for that split second, you're just blind, and you're just hoping that nobody's done something that you aren't aware of. And when you're in a pack like that, it's amazing how much, I don't want to call it ESP, but your other senses kind of become very heightened. Like, you know, you can tell just by the way that your leathers are on your back that somebody's behind you. You have a different kind of hearing that allows you to realize that there's actually a bike to the inside of you as opposed to the outside of you. And everything becomes very, very heightened and very, very, you become very aware of every sense that you actually have. And you need that. And these guys are the best at it. So for them, it's a challenge, but I think it's a challenge that they're all up for. And I think that it really isn't as big as what we may want to make it out to be.
Right. So we get to the start of the race. Now, you know, unfortunately, Booth Amos, he's new to the series. I pretty much turned to the torpedo. He ended up taking Sasaki and Yurchenko out just on lap two.
That was a big crash.
Yeah, that was a bummer, too. He definitely got in way too hot. Might have had the thing where he got sucked in to the corner a little bit. You know, obviously, his first year. But those guys all got up, luckily, because that could have been way worse. And then we had, not too long after, it was Darren Binder. He ended up crashing out. And this has kind of been his thing where it's been holding him back. Is that he's really fast, but he also has a lot of DNFs to his name, too.
Yeah, I didn't want to see Binder go down. But the race was interesting in the beginning. You know, it's kind of like a typical Moto 3 race. But the one thing that I noticed, the KTMs do not have an advantage over the Hondas anymore.
Oh,
that
no.
is gone.
Yep.
That was the first thing that, like, appeared was, because Canet was on the KTM, and he was really the only KTM that was at the very front of the pack, if you will. And he would come onto that last, he'd be leading through the last turn, and then De La Porta would just come on with that Honda and just go, bye.
It wasn't even a little faster. It was considerably faster.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It's obvious that Honda has a distinct top-end advantage over KTM. But what we don't know is when we get to a track like Le Mans, which is very start-stop and it's a lot of acceleration, does Honda have the acceleration to go with it? You know, Qatar is a very flowy track, so you're pretty much on the gas all the time. So I'll be interested to see what happens when we get to there. But, you know, Honda so far has made good on their promise that they were going to come after KTM, and they pretty much did it right out of the box.
Dude.
And another, you know, Della Porta was also a guy that I thought was riding a really interesting race. I thought he had the absolute slipstream just completely mastered. He would come out second or third on that last turn, and he would just hunt everybody down in that draft and just go slingshot by. I'd love to see the kid on a mile dirt track somewhere, because it's all about the draft, and he just made it look so simple. Even against the other Hondas, it didn't matter who he was drafting. His timing was just impeccable and didn't really have any trouble going to the front at all, which was I thought was an interesting part of the race for me.
No, there's definitely an art to that, because when you're coming out of that final corner, a lot of people tend to, you see, you know, they get the corner speed up, but then they catch up too quick out of the corner and they have to roll off for that split second. And that split second is basically the draft is lost. They'll sit behind, but they'll never get that nice swooping, you know, suck you in kind of draft, because they, you know, the other corner they messed up, but he's got that racecraft to time it just perfectly where he lets him get a little gap and rolls up nice and tight. And when he's coming off there, he's on full gas and full tuck right behind him. He did a great job of that, you know, the whole race.
Yeah, entire time.
Yeah, so we got to see the penalty lap take place, although it wasn't necessarily supposed to happen. When Fanati got the warning for exceeding track limits, and all he had to do was just, you know, it was the warning. But he went ahead, and considering Fanati's been in so much trouble, he's being a good boy now, decided to go ahead and run the Joker lap around the outside of the corner. And what they say, he lost like a second and a half. It was amazing how fast he still took that outside turn.
Oh, yeah. You know, so many things about this one. There was the whole Twitter conspiracy theory that Fanati had outbraked himself. No, I do not believe, having watched it, that Fanati outbroke himself and went to the penalty lane because of that. I think he just screwed up and didn't read his dash closely enough to realize that he was not getting a penalty. He was just getting a warning. And so pretty much I think that kind of scuttled Fanati's race, because there for a while you had to believe that Fanati was coming to the front, and Fanati was basically at the front, and you had to think, well, Fanati's going to wind up winning the race. And then that penalty that wasn't a penalty shows up, and now it's in there. Now, I get why they've added this idea of the long lap, the Joker lane, if you will, or whatever you want to call this thing. I'm not so sure that I'm actually in love with this idea. What are you thinking?
This is a wait and see. It works here, but not every track can do this. I mean, imagine this is at Laguna. What would they do? There's no space for that. There's barely a space for a track itself. If you can't have it at every track, you don't want to be switching the rules up on these guys weekend to weekend, because that's going to make it really hard for them to keep track of, you know, which corners they need to take and not take. I do think it's better than having to give the spot back, because if you enforce a penalty to a T, like me and Derek said, you know, you can exceed track limits, be in fifth place and sixth place is 2 seconds behind you, and you got to somehow give up that spot. Or if you don't take the spot, then you got to do a ride through penalty, which is way worse. So what are you going to do? But you also don't, it's a tough call, because what are you going to do? Are you going to take the time off at the end of the race so the guy gets on the podium, or worse yet, a win? And it's like, well, we have to penalize you for that track limits 15 laps ago, where you gained a small advantage and had nothing to do with the end result, but we're going to go ahead and strip you of that win now because we had to take a second and a half off of you. You don't want that either.
I think it's an improvement over, hey, drop one place. Because there's a little bit more definitive time there. And it's definitely, like I said, it's not like going through the pit lane. It's a wait and definitely see, because where else, you know, what other tracks are you going to be able to do this at? You know, like I said, if they're at Laguna Seca, where the hell are you going to do it? It'd be really isn't a place to actually do it.
No.
So, I mean, it's a good idea, but I'm not so sure that it's actually the absolute right idea. But you have to do something. And I applaud him for at least trying it. But
yes.
My take is that I'm not a huge fan of it, because what happens if on the last lap or the penultimate lap somebody gets a warning for going out of bounds, right? So then you apply it. Well, no racer is going to go on the last lap to the penalty lane. So what are you going to do then?
Yeah,
there's a whole. I think it's fine if you have all these penalties and they're all done early in the race. But I don't know how you're going to solve it if the penalties happen at the end of the race. And that's always where I'm always concerned, that it's the end of the race and somebody should have a penalty but doesn't take a penalty, but someone maybe like thought they had a penalty but didn't take a penalty. So now you have implications for race wins and championships, which I don't think any of us want.
No, I guess they're going to have to do something where it's, we have all these rules, and then at the end they're going to have to leave it open and say, you know, down to judgment of panel or something like that. But we're going to see. We're going to see how it plays out this year. It worked fine here. So, I mean, we are testing it. No rules forever for right now. So We'll see how it goes. Now, Moto 3 didn't disappoint whatsoever. It still elbows out. These guys go for, you leave a gap, they're coming to get it. We got down to those final laps, and we still had, 10, 15 bikes that could get up there and possibly
get the win. Yeah, I think
it
was like a 13 rider lead group. It was gnarly.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't disappoint. And I didn't see this one coming, but in the middle of the race, he looked strong, Kaito Toba, but then he started to drop back a little bit to that fifth, sixth, and maybe he was monitoring his tires, which if he was, is showing even more maturity that he was able to serve the tires, sit up front, and then eventually come through and get the win. And of course, he ticked all the boxes with the win. It's his first win, his first podium, and the first Japanese rider to win a Moto 3 race. That's not too bad of a weekend.
No, that's a great weekend for him. It was a surprise that he won. I don't think any of us would have looked at what he had done last year and said, hey, this guy's going to come back and win the opener in Qatar.
Not a chance.
He did. Let's see how this goes. I don't want to say that he had the bike advantage, but the Hondas were definitely strong.
Yes.
Della Porta went there right with him and finished second. It was just one of those things that Della Porta, who was mastering the draft, didn't seem to be able to master it on the last lap when he really needed it.
Right.
But it was definitely another very strong. It was actually a very strong showing by Kinnett. He actually kind of rode inside of himself, kind of rode together, didn't kind of get crazy anywhere along the way. Put it on the box. I mean, consistency is going to be everything. It's a long season, and he was first KTM home, so Things are looking good. It's a new team by Max Biaggi with KTMs. You really can't complain about it. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when we get to Argentina, and you got Fanati maybe kind of starts to not be a good boy anymore. I'm curious to see where this is going to go, just out of pure desire to see just it get crazy in Moto 3. But it's always crazy in Moto 3.
And, Marcus Ramirez came good at the end. He was kind of hiding a little bit there in the back of the front pack. He got the fourth place. And then Celestino Vietti, he's the new kid on the block here from the Sky Racing team. He finished there and finished up the top five. Nico Antonelli was running up front for a little bit, and I was kind of biting the fingernails there, like, is this Antonelli's run to the front, and then you're going to see him go down? No, it wasn't the case. As a matter of fact, there wasn't a whole, outside of two big crashes, there wasn't a lot of people going down, which, for Moto 3, you don't want to say you expect that these riders are still very talented, but this is probably where you're going to see the most mistakes the first race of the season, and everybody was doing great.
Yeah, I think everyone really behaved themselves. Everyone rode very controlled race. Really can't complain.
All right, cool. So that wraps up Moto 3. We don't really need to go through the championship. If you want to know, just go back and look at the race results, and you'll know the championship results. Moto 2, the qualifying there. Now, this is another class that's gone through a lot of changes, not only with riders going to new teams. You've got some riders coming back from MotoGP. Tom Luthi's got guys coming up. Jorge Martin, Marco Bezzecchi. So there's a lot of talent. But not only that, the bikes have gone through a change. They've gone to 765cc. They've got 30 more horsepower. So things were going to be completely different this year, right, Jim?
Yeah, and they're also, we were told it was going to be different. And don't forget, these bikes now have electronics that are not of the caliber of MotoGP bikes, but they're definitely a tunable Magneti Marelli system that's got, some base traction control, some base wheelie control in it. Which I think is a good thing to kind of get these guys a little bit of work on setup of electronics and try to figure out how that interacts and affects the chassis and other little parts that are in there. If you're constantly hitting on a on the traction control, that's going to cause some frequency inside of the bike, and you're going to kind of, maybe that'll screw up the suspension because it's trying to drive, not drive, and you get a pumping action or something on the rear or the front, anything like that. So it's it was going to be different. It was going to be new, but somehow it just seemed the same.
Yep. All right, so it's not going to be a fun theme, but it is a theme. When we, just like we said in Moto 3, where are the KTMs? Because in Moto 2, it's happening there as well. Kalex has come out. The bike is definitely superior to the KTM because 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, all on Kalex. Brad Binder on the factory KTM was your first KTM. Back that up with his teammate Jorge Martin in 11th. And then it's all the way back to Iker Lecuona back there in 16th. So KTM has got some work to do, and we haven't even gotten on to the GP project. Going into Moto 2, a lot of names we're used to seeing up to the front. Marshall Schroeder, always been a strong qualifier. We know that, but sometimes has a trouble turning those strong qualifyings into strong results in the race. Xavi Virge, he's new on the Mark VDS team, out qualifying his teammate. That's a way to introduce yourself to the team. Lorenzo Baldessari, a strong runner. We know he's going to be a front runner this year on the KLX there in third. Luca Marini, another strong rider who came to life last year, getting out of his brother's shadow, finally. He is now he qualified fourth. And then Remy Gardner putting it on in the top five in fifth place. Good for Remy. It's good to see him, you know, get back up there. Pretty sure being injury-free for the first time in quite some time is helping his progress.
You know, I thought that it was good to see the guys where they were. You kind of maybe expected sort of those people to be there. I think I would have expected Alex Marquez to be a little farther up on the grid. And I think that's really the only thing that I'm probably would have expected to have happened, but it didn't work out that way. But hey, that's why we line up and go racing, right?
Yep. And qualifying, you know, it's kind of a shame I missed it now, but oh, let me take a second here to rant, Jim, because Skyler likes to get on his soapbox. MotoGP.com. Dude, how are you going to go through and do a website change on your opening weekend that doesn't work? Not only did I have problems live streaming, I ran into half a dozen other people that were complaining to me that it wasn't working either. We couldn't load the live stream. You couldn't load the videos page. It kept circling back and it would log you out. And trust me, dude, I do tech support for a living. I brought out the suitcase and went to work on my tools and could not get it. It was on their end. Multiple systems, multiple operating systems, you name it, could not get it to work. Now, that's not to say everybody was affected, but I was not a happy camper. I wasn't happy about it because I was also struggling with NBC's service as well, so I couldn't get my IndyCars in on time. I was sitting here in full pout mode and bitching while my wife had to put up with it because Skyler couldn't get his racing on like he wanted to. But it all came back to work, so part of the reason I missed qualifying because I just couldn't get shit to work. But let's circle back here to Moto 2. They have now changed up to the two qualifying sessions, much like GP. That's going to make things interesting for them this year because a lot less bikes on track is something they also need to, you know, go ahead and apply that to Moto 3 if they haven't already.
That's for sure. I mean, I like that idea of having the 15-minute sessions. I think it just is a better flow and it makes you go out there and throw something down. So there's no waiting around on that one.
No. You know, they go out there and test things out. Much like MotoGP.com should have run a beta test. All right, I'm done. I swear I'm done with that. Anyway, we get on to the race. Was good at first, and then I had to kind of try to keep myself awake through most of the middle part of it.
Yeah, you know, okay, let's talk about the part that I think is totally cool. The friggin' three-cylinder Triumph sounds amazing. Now we've heard them in anger, how they sound. To me, if you listen to like an onboard of the bike, it sounds very much like a flat six Porsche RSR that you'd see like in maybe American Le Mans series or IMSA series or, you know, like a GT kind of class in Europe. Sounds fantastic. What's interesting, though, is when you put all of them together in a draft and they sort of all go by at one time, you'll get this because of who you are, but it reminds me of IndyCar, like in the late 90s, or Champ Car in the late 90s, when they had like the 2.68 liter V8s and the turbos. It makes that same turbo whizzy sound that's just screaming by, and I just... It's a great, great sound for a class, for a bike. And I think what's really cool about it is it's a completely different sound than MotoGP, and a completely different sound, again, from what Moto3 is. And I think it's really a perfect combination. It's a little bit bigger displacement. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit of electronics in there. But I just think it's just fabulous. Although I think a lot of people were hoping that it was going to turn into an axe murderer class again, because it was going to be crazy because you got these chassis that are all changed and everything, and it's going to be a different torque curve. It didn't really do that. I mean, no. Either the guys that we expect to be at the front of the front, like you said, the middle of the race got a little bit boring. You kind of going like, okay, what's going to happen? Luthi was given his best. He's the only one who was making up any ground. I mean, pretty much everybody was going to be where they were if it wasn't for Luthi. And, you know, Luthi made it interesting, so you could at least see, is Luthi gonna get there? And when Luthi gets there, is Baldassare gonna actually have any tire to fight with Luthi on there? But another thing with the Triumph engines and the Calyx chassis and all this stuff is that there was a pronounced lack of anybody backing a bike into a corner.
Well, that's gotta do with some of the electronics too, right?
Well, yeah. I would think it's part of his electronics, but I would have thought with the big torquey Triumph motor, I would have thought there'd been that same style. You'd back it in to go fast, back it in, go to a V, kind of dirt track, diamond it off, turn the throttle back on, shoot back out. But everybody was wheels in line, and it was back to being, it was definitely a completely different departure than the way everybody's been riding Moto2 for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that everybody made that change together. Nobody was trying to still maintain how they rode last year. Everybody went to this new way. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to put the wheels in line, going to use the traction control, and we're going to go with it. And I just thought that was another interesting take in a race that it was like, it was so visually different on how everybody was riding. So it was interesting in that respect, but the racing could have been better.
Yeah, especially when guys like Charvi Virhe, if they're not getting it sideways, you can definitely tell the electronics and the design of the new bikes is definitely different than the 600s of the past. Mm-hmm. And maybe this will work out to be, it'll work in reverse, where when we first went to Moto2 back in, what was that, 2009? When we first went to that, it was a crab shoot. There was, the bikes were raw in development, and you didn't know who was going to win. The bikes were everywhere. We didn't know how the tires were going to work. We did, there was a lot of unknowns. This isn't a revolution. It's the evolution, Corny mm-hmm. phrase, but it applies here. Where, yes, they did make quite a few changes, but there's so much data on that platform. I don't think the tires have changed.
No, I think it's the same Dunlops.
Yeah, how they're, able to use everything. Definitely it was... they had to go back and, polish the wheel, not create the wheel. So it lended itself so far right now is kind of a boring, it was one boring race. Small sample size. Obviously, we get to a different track. We can get to Argentina. It could be crazy, and we could be like, well, never mind. But it was a bit of a warning. Even one of our former hosts, Martin, when he was talking about, he was there at the track, he said, visually, it wasn't too stunning either. I'm watching the bikes, and they seemed, he said the sound was amazing. He agrees with you on that. But it's lacking something right now that we've gotten so used to Moto2 that may come back. We'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. It is literally a wait and see, because that's what it's going to be all about. And, I think it's like anything else. It's just different, and it's going to take a little bit. And I don't know if it's fair to say it, but I think Qatar is just a different track than what most of the tracks are race on. It's a very flowy track. There aren't chicanes or anything to sort of give you a stop-start kind of a feel to it.
Nighttime.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a track. It produces great racing. Like, Phillip Island produces great racing. So, who knows what's going to happen with the other tracks. be interesting to see what they do when they get to like Jerez and some of the smaller, twistier kind of tracks. And it'll be cool. Let's just, you know, let's look forward to it. Let's be excited about it because let's embrace the new.
Yeah, so you had mentioned, you know, when Luthi, he was making his way. He was picking him off, getting up there. Maybe spent a little too much time trying to get by his teammate. But when he did finally get up there and he started running down Baldessari, it looked like Baldessari might have had him a little bit covered because he started to pull the gap once again. It's like, okay, Baldessari was maintaining. He's pushing it again. And really, it was Luthi just kind of had to calm down for a second. He ran wide a couple times trying to push a little too hard. Got the wheels back on track and ran him down. And it looked ominous coming into the last lap that Luthi was going to get him back there and those tight right-handers get by him and pull away for the win. But it didn't quite work out that way. And Baldessari got him by the narrowest of margins. It was only 0.03 of a second that he beat him by to the line. That's about what? A rim?
probably at most, yeah. Nah, I mean, it was a good race there at the end, you know. I mean, it was that middle section, which we've, you know, kind of tend to have seen last year. The middle section of the race gets boring with the Moto2 guys, and we kind of have the same thing. But you know, Luthi made it something special. So hopefully, you know, the other teams will be able to sort of look at their data, look at what they've got now, kind of got a good race data set, if you will, to be able to try to make a few changes, try to be a little closer to everybody else, and we'll see how it goes. You know, there was definitely some guys that are definitely struggling. I think Alex Marquez is struggling a little bit. Lowe's is kind of struggling a little bit. You know, Gardner, I thought, had a fantastic ride.
Yeah,
all the way around. I mean, he just missed out on having a podium.
Yeah, Schrader got him by 0.02.
Yeah, it was super close. So, you know, I mean, it was there. It sort of was a good primer. It kind of gave us an idea of like where everybody is. I really hope KTM figures something else out and figures it out quickly, because I really want to see. I want to see Brad Binder. I want to see Jorge Martin. I want to see Bezzecchi. I want to see these guys closer to the front, fighting for the wins. But they're just, it just right now they are just nowhere to be found. And
no.
I mean, like, woof, man, that's just not even good.
No, Brad Binder, you know, didn't even get up to his qualifying position. He was back in 12th, and then you got to go all the way back to 21st for the next KTM. I mean, that is not what KTM is expecting from this class or this year. I know these riders themselves are not expecting that, but they've turned it around quickly before we've seen them. They've got the resources, but the one thing I'm worried about is too much, right? First, it was Moto3 project, and then it was the MotoGP project. You know, now you've got the full-on blown Moto2. You've brought in Tech 3 on both the Moto2 and the MotoGP project. Your resources can get spread thin. They do make a lot of money, but brain power only goes so far. And if that's getting spread out amongst three classes and six teams, that can take its toll on a development.
It's growing pains. Right. I mean, it's hard to say that it's, you know, I mean, there's only one. I mean, look at it this way. Honda built probably another very good Marc Marquez bike for MotoGP, and they improved the Moto3 bike, and they're probably the only manufacturer who has the brain power, manufacturing capability, and the technicians to make it all work, right? Mm-hmm. If anybody else in that paddock has a chance to actually do it and do it right, it's KTM. It remains to be seen what they have to do or what adjustment they have to make as far as, you know, brain power, manufacturing capability, or whatever it is that they need to do to make these changes. But that's part of the fun of racing, right? It's trying to see what happens. I mean, we could show up in Argentina and it could be completely different. The KTMs could be right at the top of the list, although that would be monumental, because the Kalex is definitely the bike to have right now.
Yep. And then I didn't look, but we probably should go through and look for some injury updates. I could look one on Nico Bellega and Jorge Varo had the crash in a turn one. And man, Navarro got one of the nastiest high slides I've seen in a while. But not only did it throw him up, but it threw him out forward as well. I think he grabbed a handful of brake trying to make sure he didn't hit the falling Nico Bellega when he went down. that was a bit of a bummer, but I think most of them did get up eventually and walk away under their own power, but I think they all had ended up going in for medical checks as well.
Yeah, I didn't come up with a medical update on anybody, but yeah, I think they're all okay. Maybe just some really bad, hopefully it's just, you know, some bad bruises.
Exactly. And we'll be all shipshape for Argentina. All right, so MotoGP, final race of the weekend, the one we've all been looking forward to. The sun has set, the track was ready. And first, we had to get some qualifying out of the way. Qualifying was a little bit of a lie, Jim. Maverick Viñales getting pole, not necessarily how the race was going to go for him, but then Andrea Dovizioso, here we go. Ducati, you know, now the hand is shown. This is why testing is testing, right? Qatar, 2 weeks ago, Ducatis were nowhere. Where are they now? Second, Dovizioso. Fourth, Jack Miller. Seventh, Petrucci. I mean, the Ducatis are there. So I was like, okay, we can all get back to reality. We're starting to see it. But here's a name that we need to pay attention to maybe for the rest of the year. We saw it in testing last week, and maybe this could be just a dummy track that's really good for him. But Quartararo, man, it was looking good.
Oh, yeah. Quartararo was a real dark horse for this one. I don't think he was going to touch the guys at the very sharp end of the grid, but I think Quartararo could have been in that 4, 5, 6 had he not stalled the bike in the start. But I guess we'll come to that.
Yeah. So Cal Crutchlow, a heroic effort, qualifying 6th. I don't think he did. Was he on the transfer? I don't think he was even on the transfer. I think he got in on merit from the first one.
He was in on merit.
Yeah, and then another rookie, Morbidelli, Juan Mir, getting in their 11th, you know, looking good, and Suzuki itself was looking amazing, even though their qualifying positions, the 10th, 11th, weren't the best. Really though, if you look through their corner speed and how they progressed over the weekend, they were, you know, giving warning shots. I think Petrucci or Dovizioso was saying, like, you know, you need to be concerned about the Suzukis. They're faster than their qualifying shows. Mm-hmm. But then we got back to the guys who didn't qualify so well that we expect. Rossi, not doing so well. He's still struggling with the Yamaha. We'll get to that. And then Lorenzo, of course, he's hurt. And then, of course, we get onto our KTMs and Aprilia stuff. Not the greatest for everybody, but, you know, racing is one thing, qualifying is another. Let's get on to the one we really want to talk about now that qualifying's out of the way.
Have one quick thing in qualifying about Pol Espargaró. If you watched his KTM, that thing was pumping on both the front and the rear viciously around the entire track, which the KTMs were generally pretty Honda-esque looking, if you will. Kind of, you could get it in there deep on the brakes, square it up, set it on the center fat part of the tire, shoot it back out. It was not working like that for Paul. It was literally like you could just watch the whole bike just oscillate up and down, up and down, up and down, and pitch front to back, front to back, front to back. So whatever KTM had, they lost the plot. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that a couple of times just on track days. You go to certain corners, and you can watch the guys who are fastest when they go through a corner. Like you said, it's gas on, bike goes straight. And then the sound of the engine doesn't change. Whereas the ones where you're talking about, you get that pump, you can actually hear them come out of the corner because they do the as they're going. Mm-hmm. And you've got to think that harmonic is getting resonated throughout the entire bike. It's causing the rider to be shook so hard that they can't keep it steady on the gas. The bike is losing traction. It's coming off. It's coming on. Basically, that means the bike is no good.
Yeah.
At that point, the setup at least is no good for that moment. And especially if it's like you were saying, if he's getting that out of more than just one corner, because, you know, with racing, you know, it's give and take. You may be fantastic in one corner, horrible in another, sit somewhere in the middle. But if it was doing that in multiple parts of the track, they've definitely got something to work on.
Anywhere the camera was on that bike, it was all over the place. So, yeah, it was bad.
Get to the race on the next day. One of the things that we came out of qualifying was that Lorenzo and a couple of the other riders thought that the race moved up. Now, I didn't pay attention to that because I got to the race late. Did they move the start time up by an hour, or did they leave it alone?
They left it alone. Say what you want about that. There is obviously the fact that you've gone from an incredibly hot track because of the sunshine. It's the desert, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go into night, it's going to cool off. And every night that they had previous, the track temperature would keep going down, 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 down. And the dew would come in. Now, Lorenzo had a crash in qualifying. He kind of pointed to the sky. It was like a dew thing. On race day, it was the oddest thing. They had cooling track temperatures, but the track temperature basically stabilized at about halfway through the race, never dropped any lower. There was very little wind, which I think was the biggest thing that helped the race, and no dew for whatever reason. So, yeah, it just, it's one of those odd things. It happens in night racing, and I don't know. What do you want? Do you want the spectacle of it, or do you want to race around in the desert that you can't really, there's nothing really there to see? So, take your pick.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if Quartararo had his pick, he would not stall the bike on the line again.
No,
start.
Yeah, that's
That was heartbreaking to watch,
that
man.
That was heartbreaking, yeah. I mean, it was. He just made a simple mistake and couldn't get off the line, so then he had to be taken off the grid. He had to go to the pit lane. He was going to have to start after everybody else started. It was
without
just
his tires being warmed up either, or his brakes being warmed up. And cold all around. His adrenaline's going through the roof. I mean, man, your first MotoGP start, if that wasn't enough adrenaline going through your veins to have that happen to you and try to recoup and, the announcers are like, dude, he's going to go on a really cold rear tire. We hope someone's gotten in his ear, and it's like, take it easy, take it easy. Which he did, which is good. It's good. But, man, I felt like not only his stalling took it away from him, but I feel like it might have taken something away out of the race that we might have seen. You know, he definitely could have fought with the rest of the Yamahas. I guarantee that.
Let's put it this way. He was going to spoil somebody's race.
For sure.
Let's just be honest about it. He was going to be the guy who was going to spoil someone's race because that person or persons was not going to be expecting Quartararo to be there. So he's kind of like the new Johann Zarco, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're not expecting this kid to be there, and you shouldn't be there, but he is. And you know what? They're definitely on the older bike.
Actually, I think Derek had mentioned on the last show that they decided to give him the 2019 his bike as well, but he's not going to be getting the updates like Morbidelli's going to be getting.
Okay.
But we also put an asterisk on that. If his results are good enough, you damn sure he's going to be getting those updates. The way things are going right now, he might be working his way towards that.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always that possibility that, you know, the satellite bikes are going to kind of fall behind the development of the factory bikes. So,
right.
You know, someone like Quartararo needs to really make a showing early on just so that people recognize that he's there.
Right.
And that's kind of what he missed out on. But I still think that a lot of talk was about him and where he qualified, and that's a good thing. You know, just to be mentioned, you know, in the top, hey, you know, be qualifying, the best qualifying by a rookie since I think what, Toseland in 2007 or 2008 maybe. Something around there.
That seems about the right time.
Yeah.
But, you know, and kudos to him as well. Not only did he get back out there, he finished the race, which is another feather in the cap, right, for a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
You go out there and do that. A lot of guys don't do that in their first race. He caught up, got some places, burned up his tires. He was definitely on to get some points. Tires went out from him because he was setting record laps as he was catching everybody. He was at one point running almost in a second and a half faster than leaders were as they were maintaining up front. And that's something I wanted to talk to you about, because the maintaining tires thing is very, very F1. It's let's all go out and go slow and then turn it up. Well, shit, if we're going to do that, let's go the World Superbike route and let's just run 2 10-lap races and balls to the wall.
Yeah, this is a mixed message kind of thing to me. I agree that I like racing if it's flat out all the time. And, you know, the last time we had flat out racing from lights out to finish was the 800 era.
Mm-hmm.
And did you really like those races? Because if Lorenzo got the whole shot, he was gone and done, and nobody was ever going to catch him, right? Mm-hmm. And people will say, well, those races were boring. Well, was this race boring?
Nope.
In some ways, you see, this is also another part for me that's I'm struggling with. Everybody talked, and there's a lot of Twitter sphere was kind of going crazy about how great this race was. I'm not in that camp. To me, something is missing in that race. I can't put my finger on it. I'm not trying to be a downer on what was a great race. Do not misunderstand that part of what I'm saying. But for me, there was some element of this race that did not make me think it was a great race. You had a lot of guys riding at the front. They were all close together, but it was still somewhat processional. You know, if you think back, well, it was a great race. Assen was a great race, but you had guys three wide all over the place. But that's Assen. It's a completely different type of track than what you have in the desert. And I don't know if that was what it is. I don't know if it's the tires and we need to save them because we can't race that hard on them all the way. But I just think you've done so much with the electronics and the unified electronics. I think that you could build a little bit better tire by Michelin that the guys could run a little bit harder, or maybe only have to wait like maybe 3 or 5 laps to kind of get it bedded in and then kind of go with it. And I think I'd be happier, but I don't know if that's going to lead to better racing. But what we got right now is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I wonder if some of it is because this is a bit of a repeat from last year. Maybe that's why you don't feel it was as great of a race, because it's like, oh, it's Marquez and Dovizioso. And wait, is Marquez going to go into the fast corner? And,
Of course he is.
All right, cool. Wait, what am I watching? Did I click the wrong video? Is this last year's feed shit?
What color is the Ducati? Quick, somebody check for me.
I mean, yeah, you know, good race. Also, this may be also self-hype. Like getting too amped up for the race, maybe? I'm not sure, because there was a lot of good stuff. But I do kind of see what you're saying as well, where it's like, you know, Rins was making it interesting because he wanted to make a couple passes. That was cool. But for the most part, it was, hey, let's all just maintain.
Dovizioso even said that about Rins. He's like, dude, his corner speed is so sick, and he was going way too fast. The tire was never going to last. So every time he went by, I had to be sure that I got back in front and slowed the pace back down. And if you look at the middle of the race, there's a point where Dovizioso's out front, Marquez is there with him, and Dovi kind of like goes into the 155s. It's the first time Dovi goes to the 155s. And you're thinking, oh, okay, Dovi's going to throw the pin out here. Let's go. And he's going to see who goes with him. Well, there's only one guy who could go with him, Marc Marquez, which you kind of knew that was what was going to happen. But it would just go to show you how slow Dovi and Marc were actually riding,
right?
That they couldn't – that this – you know, that this was happening. The Suzuki is a great bike. It is very, very competitive motorcycle now.
Oh, they need some horsepower.
It's missing a skosh of horsepower, and they're going to be right there. But it's, you could see that after that, I kind of switched off, because I realized Dovizioso is actually riding to a pace to manage that tire, as opposed to I'm riding a race to win it. I'm riding a race to not lose it, as opposed to not win it.
Dude, when they started going and they started spreading out like who were the real players that were going to go, man, that's when Yamaha was already barely hanging on the back. They couldn't go. And if you watch that bike, it is the same problem they had last year. I saw Maverick several times thank God for electronics. He was probably getting ready to send himself to the moon. He's full leaned over, picks the bike up, hits the gas, and his tire just spins, gives a couple pumps, and it's like, oh, there goes the field. No acceleration, no traction coming off the corners, and that's where they struggled so mightily with last year. And he could even, I mean, we saw this the same earlier stuff with Maverick and the Yamaha, where, you know, cold tires, full tank of gas, you know, first place to seventh place right off the bat in the first couple of corners. But he could even do his magical thing where he would set those like 7 blistering laps at the end of a race. He couldn't even get there. And Rossi eventually got by him. And he you know, couldn't even get there for the most part and fight off Juan Mir, who was going backwards after kind of burning up his tires early. You know, you're dealing with a rookie, and the Yamaha just it looked exactly as Rossi was explaining how it was going to be. I mean, he had a valiant effort to go from 14th to 5th.
Yeah, Rossi had a great ride for that.
This is also, you know, so you have to take someone who's got that much experience, that much skill to manage the situation to come up with a 5th. And you know that was, you know, Rossi's using 100% of the brain power just to get a 5th, and that's not what Yamaha is all about. So they've got to get back and figure out what is going on, because I don't have a dog in the fight. I, you know, Maverick, Rossi, whatever. I just want to see, I don't want to see the Marc Marquez Andrea Dovizioso show again for another year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just, you want it to be all the factories right there. And you know that Yamaha can build a competitive motorcycle, and they just haven't been able to do it. But, you know, again, it's Rossi magic. He's always been a Sunday racer. It's always true. Has. Never really been a qualifier. The thing that got me with Vinales was he was like, he was so up. He was so pumped. He was so fast. He loved the bike. He had started to ride in a hybrid Honda Ducati fashion where he was getting into the corner deep, turning it quickly on the edge, setting it back up, shooting it off. Yeah, man, this works, man. They gave me a great bike. You know, there's no excuse. I'm the cause if it doesn't work. And you go out at the start, you got buried. Everybody went by you, and you couldn't ride. You found out you couldn't ride that line that you were riding in practice or in qualifying. And consequently, you wind up in the back.
You said something important. Ride that line. That's something I noticed when I was doing some of the pit work. You would see guys go out there and qualifying. That's because they take these wide, sweeping corners, and they're really, really fast because they can ride the bike the way that they need to on the track. But when it came down to a pack, they would go to set up for these wide corners, and guys would just dive underneath them because they're doing the point-and-shoot method, right? And it would screw their lines up. They could never get a flow unless they got back and got some separation. They could pick one guy off at a time on the brakes going into the corner and keep the corner speed or whatever it is. But that's a good point that I haven't really thought about with that Yamaha. Like, yeah, if it gets the line that it needs, whatever that line is, they obviously have a problem replicating that. And if you're designing a bike for the qualifying, they've done a great job in that. But that's a good point. They can't ride, not necessarily the racing line, but in race racing line.
Huh. Yeah.
We'll have to pay attention to that. Especially, you know, like we said, it's early. Everybody's got to get off the back foot. But if you're, you know, looking at the same demons as last year, not a great sign. But this could all be corrected quickly. They could go back and like, oh, we moved the seat back 2 inches and boom, done. Cool. Thanks. See you later. Speaking of seats, Jack Miller decided he didn't want one this race.
Same thing.
See ya. Threw that thing off. Man, I've never seen a seat break. Was that the case of a seat breaking or someone screwing up and not bolting it down?
Good question. My guess is somebody didn't tighten something. And one thing I could think of is that they were making some final adjustment, and maybe they go under the seat to adjust, maybe rebound or preload or something on the shock on the back, and they got pinched on time and they didn't tighten things down tight enough. It's the only thing I can come up with because, I mean, if it wasn't that, that's really a pretty rookie-type error for a very well-equipped and funded Primrac, you know what I'm talking about, Ducati.
Junior Ducati team. There we go.
Thank you.
So the race was also pretty amazing. Nobody went down, is what I had in my notes, and then right, as soon as I wrote that, Bradley Smith had a crash, a little tumble. He dropped it. But, I mean, for the most part, everyone, another fantastic race. You had the closest top 15 ever. Dovizioso gets it on the gas in front of Marc Marquez. Cal Crutcher, though, that is the man to Cal who got the race. I mean, Dovizioso's impressive, Marc Marquez. But, no, there's no way I was putting Cal on the podium. Not from a lack of skill, but just from, I didn't think he was going to make it through the whole race with the injury that he had. And what he did, he played it smart. And he just rode his brains out. And the best part was his interview at the end. Like, all the ankle's fine, but I caught a foot peg in the ass, and I can't feel my left ass cheek. And it's like, all right, that's
brilliant, Cal.
Yeah. Just have him in there, even if he doesn't get on the podium. Let's just stick a mic in front of his face and see what he says.
He would be a great color commentator.
Oh, they couldn't have it very long. He would piss everybody off.
That's the part. That's the part that's so good, though.
Oh, I know. I know. Alex Rins finishing fourth.
Great ride by the Suzukis.
Petrucci down in sixth. Man, did you see his face when they cut to him when they got back to the pits? This man had a 1,000-yard stare. I thought someone killed his mother.
Petrucci?
Yeah, it looked bad. He was sitting in the pit box. No one was talking to him. He hands in his lap, helmet off. His jaw was slack, just staring off into the distance like he had no answers. I'm like, bro, one race.
You also had two soft tires.
Yeah.
You went soft, soft, and that was not because everybody who was in front of you was medium, medium. So you chose a set of soft tires thinking that the track was going to continuously cool as the night went on, and it didn't. Yeah. It stabilized, and you weren't able to maximize the advantage of that tire when you were not on the right tire. Well, that's going to happen. You're going to make these choices, and sometimes you're going to look like a hero, and sometimes you're going to look like a zero. It's a sixth place as a fractured Ducati rider. I'd take it, hold my head up high, and head to Argentina going, all right, boys, let's go get them.
Right, exactly. And then so, Vinales in seventh, whatever race. Juan Mir, strong, top 10 rookie. All right, so not only is Suzuki good, they've got really two good riders, and now that whole why'd they get rid of Andrea Dovizioso thing? Or not Dovizioso. Too many Andreas, apparently.
Iannone.
Iannone out the back? Well, because sometimes you got to see talent where it's at, and it's going to be a good season. Highly unpredictable from about 5th on down to 15th, I think. That area in there, we're going to have to see. Not only is development going to have to kick in, there's some rookies, there's people on new teams. The top 5, however, I think you're going to be, for most races, you're going to see the usual, unless Yamaha makes a big turnaround with their bikes, I think you're going to see the same players every single weekend. KTM's, we've gone on that, beat that horse. They're struggling with their woes. Lorenzo's going to eventually make an appearance up there once he gets healed up. Man, we didn't even talk about, he had two big crashes on the weekend and injured himself further. Not only was the wrist already still recovering, but now he went out and slapped himself off the ground twice and messed up his back.
He slapped himself silly.
Yes.
On that high side, that turn 6 high side. He slapped himself silly. And then he crashed again in qualifying, but this is kind of what I thought was going to happen with Lorenzo, is that he's, as much as we all want this to be some Senna-Prost battle and some teammate just beating on each other, it isn't going to happen. Marquez owns that team. That team is built for him, around him, by him. And Lorenzo might win a race here and there. There's no question about that, but he is not going to be the major player in that pit box. And I think his ego requires that he is sort of the man, and he's not going to be. And I think that might be a little bit difficult for Lorenzo to kind of get over the hurdle, if you will.
I want to see him healed up, and then let's see what's going to be.
I agree.
That's what'll be good. We had a Tito Rabat finishing down there 19th. I thought Tito was going to have a little bit better of a weekend. I think he tumbled in qualifying. He might be a little more beat up than expected. Quartararo, he fought back to 16th right behind Johan Zarco. Thought that was going to be good. Man, Pramac came out. Both Miller and Bagnaia had to retire. Bagnaia, I think, had some electrical demons show up. Jack Miller, they said because him not having a seat, it changed his seating position and put him more far forward, ended up screwing up the front tire, so he had to retire. And then, like we said, Bradley Smith dumped it. But there was another crash. The Maniac went down the cooldown lap. Whoops.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. What really happened there?
Well, they only had as the crash is happening feed, and he looked like he had low-sided and just kind of skittled himself across the ground. Look like maybe turn two or something. I'm not quite sure how it happened. Definitely one of those things that's always embarrassing for a rider is crashing on the cooldown lap. Whether you're just coming in or celebrating, it's one of those things they never really want to do. It still happens to the best of them.
Still does. But it was a good opening weekend of racing. I think each class was pretty good. Moto2 was probably the weakest of all the races. But, hey, if I get 17 more rounds of this, I'm happy.
I will definitely take it. And we get to see that back. I think it's the 31st of March is when they're going to be down in Argentina. So a couple of weeks. We'll end up getting, I think, World Superbike in between. I believe they're in Thailand. So that's coming up. in the weeks to go. Yeah, the 15th and 17th. So we're back to the MotoGP one weekend, World Superbike the next, so on and so forth, schedule until summer. I am definitely happy with that. And then we'll mix in some Moto America and British Superbike in there as well. It's back. We're 2019. If you're a four-wheel fan like me, you got IndyCar. F1 starts this weekend. Oh, mm-hmm. I am.
It's all back.
Yes, it's all back. And the we just set the clocks forward. The sun is out later. It's getting to the good time. You know, maybe some of the parts of the country can thaw out. It was a brutal winter. In some places, it's still going on. But this year for most of the country. So hopefully we give them something good to listen to while they've been stuck inside. Well, all right, Jim, I think it's time for a little housekeeping. Remember, you can reach us at our email, and that's motopod@motopodcast.com. We're also on Facebook. That's facebook.com/motopod. That is the Motopod fan page. You can go ahead and like that page. Get over there. We do a lot of questions. That, you know, it's usually where the posting for stuff gets done first. We put up a lot of links over there as well, so go ahead and check it out. If you're on Twitter, we are @moto_pod. You can follow us there for any news and announcement and general motorcycle banter. I'm on Twitter and Instagram @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter and Instagram @MotoRGV. Although I have to admit, this time of the year, most of my Twitter feed is consumed by hockey-related issues.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's getting about to be playoff hockey is coming up. So if you're a hockey fan, you're a hockey fan and a racing fan, it's going to be a really good couple of months for you.
It is a good couple of months.
Yes, sir. Derek, and tomorrow host, you can find him @MotoDerek. C on both Twitter and Instagram. Andrew, of course, is @Eddie_course. Dave Neal, he'll be catching up with Andrew, I'm sure, on some shows. That is @Dave Neal and @TheDaveNeal on Instagram. And special shout out to Phil Hall. I got a chance to listen to the first batch of interviews. There are more coming, but he got, you know, Josh Hayes, Mark Miller, and quite a few others. Always great work done by Phil. He gets, man, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes out of these guys with just a handful of questions and let them run. Some of the best interviews that we get on this show. And thanks again, Phil. We really do appreciate that. Alrighty, Jim. Well, that's it for me. I'm going to get the hell out of here and go eat and then probably start editing this bad boy.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, man. Well, thanks for getting through the sickness there and joining us for this week's show. And I'll probably see you in a couple weeks' time when we go to talk Argentina.
That's right.
All right, everyone. Zoom, zoom.